We'll get ready to start, and we're going to proceed out of order for the item that was moved removed from the consent agenda, 13.05, Pinnacle Charter Schools request for approval as a designated agency for alternative teacher preparation. Okay. Colleen, you want to start with that, see where we are here?
Absolutely. So I'm think my microphone is on, otherwise I can talk really loud. I can't hear much. So I'm Colleen O'Neill, the Executive Director for Educator Preparation and Licensing. And we had an item on our agenda, 13.05, Pinnacle Charter Schools request, that we had some questions about. So Dr. Flores, I think you had a couple of questions for us. I just wanted to be prepared to answer them.
I do have some questions, but basically I wanted to hear more about the program.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we've already had some alternative license for teachers, and I just would like to ask why this would be a better certification than a college certification.
Okay, certainly. I think I have two things. One, I would love to invite Bittner, Todd Bittner, up, who is the high school principal of Pinnacle Charter. So if Mr. Bittner could join me. I think he's prepared to be able to answer some really good questions for us about his experience with alternative education. But one of them at a very high level from our perspective that we're bringing forward is very much that this is a charter school that serves a very high needs population. It is a Title I charter school. And we are looking at different opportunities as we look at our ebb, not really the flow of educators, but our ebb of educators coming into the system, multiple pathways to really encourage educators to come in. So with that, we believe that Pinnacle Charter School is kind of one of those opportunities, potentially. And with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Bittner.
Absolutely. Do you have a specific question you have for me? I mean, because I can tell you that as someone who went through the alternative licensure program, I had already had a master's degree in criminal justice, and I dealt with at-risk students for about 9 years. And versus me going back into the education and taking a gap between my experience and becoming an educator, it was a great alternative for me personally. As the principal at Pinnacle High School, we're the only performance high school in our region, and we have tremendous staff, and their abilities there are outstanding. But when I get to the interviewing process, I'm competing against other metropolitan areas in which we don't have the same resources. And so right now I do have a gentleman who is getting an alternative licensure through Metro State. However, he'd rather be with us because he has to travel in his evenings to Metro State, whereas he could be doing it with us. He went into the alternative licensure program because he worked as an engineer at IBM for 20 years. I also have a young man that has a master's degree in physical education, and he's worked as a trainer in colleges. And, again, not wanting to go back into the education realm, but going through the alternative licensure. And the other reason that we made the original proposal was we are dealing with a high-risk population. We have over 60% free and reduced lunch, and we've got approximately, at this point, 80% Latino population. We're doing amazing things in this school, and I think that the only way we're going to be successful in this state in educating the Latino population is making sure the teachers that are doing good work with the Latino population can be spread out throughout the state. And we realize that if we're running this program, that we're going to eventually be an incubator, and we're really trying to move this forward, move our education forward, because only we benefit.
Okay. I don't know. I'm still stuck with a plan, which would be 2 years, a two-year program.
Yes.
Which would allow them to work in a classroom, not by a classroom.
No, they work. They actually work in the classroom. They actually are part of. They are actually hired employees, and they are highly qualified. They have their 24 credits within subject area. They're just trying to get an alternative licensure. Because we're a Title I school, they have to meet the highly qualified standard.
Okay.
And as our program and our outline of our program, they have to meet the highly qualified standard with their particular subject area. So we know that they're experts in their fields. So that's why we can feel comfortable about putting them in the classroom.
So they have degrees and they have 24 hours?
Which is the state requirement. I mean, you could probably speak to that better, Colleen, than I can.
They demonstrate either degree in the content area, content passing of the content assessment, or 24 credit hours in the endorsement area.
And it's not 36.
That is pedagogy.
It's not 36 hours, 24.
It is 24 hours for the state of Colorado. Yes.
Okay.
Dr. Schroeder?
Just quickly, highly qualified didn't survive ESSA, did it?
No. Highly qualified provision as we know it is not part of ESSA. Now, as Mr. Bittner talks about,
but your program, you're using those criteria.
We are. I think it's essential, especially for someone such as myself that came out of the private sector and went into the public sector, into education. I think having that educational foundation is a key to make sure that the knowledge is there.
Right. And when I say in the classroom, I mean in the classroom of a teacher that is qualified and has experience, not by the teacher. In other words, the person is not working by themselves. They're working with a teacher, which I think is really missing in most programs. I really believe that. I believe in the clinical model.
Right.
And right. Have a lot of respect for the clinical model.
Absolutely.
And think that at least one of those years should be in the classroom with a highly qualified teacher, if I may use that term. And
I absolutely
and I think that we would do if we could even pay for that, if the state would pay for that, and I think it should pay for that.
Well,
even
if
it were at $12 an hour, you know, that they would be paying for for that.
Thank you, Dr. Flores. I think one of the things is our alternative programs kind of offer two different pathways. One is an immediate need to fill a job that is vacant at that moment,
okay.
And get a teacher into the classroom to be teacher of record right then, and then support them very carefully and strongly with a mentor teacher and the pedagogical supports
yes.
that go behind that. And that's kind of the pathway that Mr. Bittner is talking about. The other pathway is very much a recruitment pathway, where they're not necessarily the teacher of record, but they're moving into that. He's actually combined them at the Pinnacle Charter High School there, or Pinnacle High School. They have actually combined that into I am the teacher of record entering, but it is a two-year program instead of a one-year program,
okay.
which actually is the majority
right.
of many of our alternative preparation programs. So in addition to ensuring that they are in the classroom, highly supported, there's a two-year program, which is kind of the ongoing induction process for support.
And we also require a lot of one-on-one time between department heads and experienced teachers pushing into those classrooms and providing direct guidance in that clinical model. It's very important for us to have that foundation.
Very good. Those are my questions.
Okay, any further questions? We have a motion for the approval of Pinnacle Charter School's request for approval as a designated agency for alternative teacher preparation.
So moved.
So moved. Is there a second? Dr. Flores?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there objection to the adoption of the motion to approve Pinnacle Charter School's request? Seeing none, that motion is declared adopted by a vote of 7-0. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
All right. Let's return then to item 12.0, University of Virginia Data Sharing Agreement. Commissioner, you want to introduce this one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate this follow-up. We had the opportunity to hear from the actual professor doing the research last board meeting. Just for some follow-up conversation today, we have Marsha Bohannon and Jill Stacy available to present and answer questions.
Okay.
Thank you,
Marsha.
Chairman sorry. Talking to them. So we kind of went through at a high level and responded to some specific questions at the last board meeting, some information about the UVA data sharing agreement. We were asked to bring back a little bit more information. You had a particular question, and then also just to highlight a couple of specific areas. We actually have a slide up here, and it's one slide, so it's really just a summary. But just to walk through that real briefly, the purpose of the study is to determine whether the charter schools teaching the core knowledge curriculum have positive effects on student achievement. There's other pieces to that purpose, but essentially that's sort of the high-level overview. We also wanted to remind folks that any data that was, any kids that were participated, the parents had the opportunity to opt in to that, and if they did not opt in, then the data was not submitted to the University of Virginia. And the other reminder I wanted to put out is this has been going on for 6 years, and this is the last set of data that they're requesting from us, and this is actually the results data. So over the period of the last 6 years during the time of the research study, this is the last installment of that data, and it would provide them with the end result of it so that they can do their longitudinal evaluations. There was one question that was raised at the, I think it was between the last meeting and this one, and that was about the character study. The survey that was provided to the parents, we gave you guys a copy of that, and there was one of you had a question on that about how that character question related to the actual study. And we received the answer from Dr. Grismer, and we shared that with you guys. I don't know if you had a chance to review that, but I think it basically was saying that core knowledge, and I'm going to defer to Gretchen here pretty soon if we go too far down this path, but core knowledge is a curriculum around character, and they might argue, they meaning the researchers might argue that it is partially a study in character. So there's some relationship, and what they're trying to do is see what that relationship is between character and the results, you know, their achievement skills. So if there are other additional questions on that particular one, if so, then I might ask Gretchen to come up.
Exactly. Yes, Ms. Masnick.
Okay. Core knowledge
is essentially a character education. I probably didn't say it right.
Okay, that's what I
Yeah.
I just turned it off, sorry.
Yes.
It's not
She'll do a better job.
So I didn't understand it that way.
I was going to say, in some ways, I think you may actually be more familiar than I am with this. But I think what the researcher was describing is more that in core knowledge curriculum, there's reference to a sort of set of virtues. Not that that is like the core thrust of core knowledge. It's a very content-driven thing. But there's some exploration of, you know, I think what they would identify as sort of core American virtues in a way. And so I think the curiosity of the researcher was whether instructing kids about those virtues at the same time as instructing them about content had any sort of impact. I think that's his question. But honestly, my depth of knowledge on this is like real shallow.
Dr.
So
Shuffle,
I would invite you to speak to it.
Dr. Shuffle, do you know much about the core knowledge curriculum and any character?
No, it's strictly by inference is my understanding.
That, okay. That's what I thought.
Inferential. Mm-hmm. It's like because the core knowledge addresses content in a specific way, the implication is how does it impact questions that could relate to character education.
I think that's right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. But you sort of would want a curriculum to expose at least outsiders or people who come from outside our country to know what those values are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's very important to get along and have an understanding of what those values are. Mm-hmm. Or else I think we don't have a cohesive society.
Marcia, could you run through, because I think it's been explained that, and I think there are a couple of questions pending on this stuff, but that the way we provide the data to Virginia is that while it's in theory personal data, we don't give it to them in a format that they could trace to any. If they were hacked tomorrow, they couldn't trace it. Nobody could trace it to a Colorado student because we don't give them those kinds of numbers. So it's just student 1A, student 1B, and so I think that's an important thing, that while it is individualized data, it's not provided to them in that format.
Yeah, you're correct. You actually explained it very well. The data itself is individual, but the name, anything that actually can connect it to an individual Colorado student is masked, so they don't see that. There is a key that can kind of unlock that, and CDE has that, but UVA is not, they don't have the ability now to actually, you know, make those connections and identify individual students.
When you say they don't have the ability now, have they ever had that ability?
You want to talk through how it started?
Yeah. Because the study was based on opt-in consent, UVA had to tell us which students had actually opted in. So they provided us with the list of the students' names. We took that list, matched it with the SACID of those students, then masked the SACID and returned back to them a list of masked data. So what they have now is the original opt-in list and the mass list, but those two don't connect.
Yes, Dr. Shovel.
Can you explain why CDE doesn't have an IRB, Institutional Review Board, to address the human subject issues for folks that take this survey? I know we used to have one, and I'm not sure why we don't have one now. It's nice that UVA has an IRB, but it strikes me as a problem that we don't have one internal to CDE.
I think Commissioner Crandall has
commented. We talked about this at length, Mr. Chair and Board Member Sheffield. I have tremendous confidence in a Tier 1 research university IRB. And so the question becomes, do we take the time, money, and effort to duplicate that process and think that we would have the resources to duplicate a Tier 1 research university IRB? And so are we simply creating more work for ourselves and just having another checklist to jump through, or do we instead ask for, spend more time on what is the research trying to accomplish? Does it provide benefit to the state?
I know, but you know what? There are a lot of Tier 1 universities that have done terrible, horrible things to people, and we really... I wasn't aware that we didn't have one. This is the first that I've learned. We need to have an institutional committee that looks at, you know, the benefits of doing this kind of research, yes or no. And I think that it's, we have the capacity. I think we have very bright people that can look into this at CDE. And I think we need a committee.
Mr. Chair, if I can respond to that, I appreciate the comment you just made, and I would have to agree 100%. There's a difference between an IRB and a difference between is this research of benefit to the state of Colorado? Are we following the right protocol? But I'm not sure we necessarily have to be a full-blown IRB with all the components and pieces that have to be there for the protection of human rights and you know, to that can be a pretty lengthy and extensive organization.
I think that's very important.
Okay.
I mean, most school districts have that.
I'm sorry.
I mean, most organizations have that. I think there are committees. I'm sure Denver Public Schools has one, and I'm sure universities themselves have them, and I think we should have one if we don't already. And I think the capacity is there to just think through what they're trying to do.
Dr. Sheffield.
And so my thought would just be that we have a different level of responsibility to our constituents and the public in Colorado in terms of research that's conducted through access to them than UVA would have. A university has a much different allegiances and purposes for doing research than what the board might approve in terms of exposing constituents to that kind of research. So my sense is that we do need a mechanism internal to CDE.
I agree.
And, Mr. Chair, I'd have to agree. And we may be saying the same thing through semantics. I'm not sure it has to be an IRB structure as opposed to some other type of an entity. And we'll bring some ideas to you because I appreciate that piece of it.
My concern is that some folks who are in charters or want to be in charters feel some sense that they must do the survey, and I don't want that to be the case. And also the linkages and the questions are interesting in terms of the methodology. And again, if we don't have a lens on the detail behind that, then we are naive to what's going on in our state, which leaves us all vulnerable. So thank you.
That's right.
Further questions? I observe a couple of things. We still have a freeze on the transmission of data to virtually everyone unless we have some sort of legal obligation to do so. And I think part of the problem that I've been concerned about with this particular study is I hate to be just plain suspicious, but there's something about this just doesn't stack up to me to be quite right. The if you look at the purpose of the study, I think we know the answer to all these questions already. You know, determine whether charter school teaching core knowledge curriculum have a positive effect on student achievement. Anybody think that that's not the case, or they want to go talk to Congressman Schaefer about it? Or look at his results as the best performing school? Then we could go look at those things. But so why we got into this, I don't know, but I'm afraid I probably could guess. So I think this was a bad decision to work with the University of General Virginia, whoever made the decision. And I have it'll be very interesting to see if they can produce a result. But I think we'll have to have some additional discussions about data sharing and additional data sharing. You finally almost get comfortable, and then you ask for, and let me just say, quite clearly, there are parents out there who aren't buying anything we're telling them about this study. Can't find copies of opt-in documents. You'd think we could produce those. Somebody should be able to produce those. Can't find copies of them. So the documentation appears to be inadequate along that, and I share Dr. Scheffel's concern that the idea that somehow you had to sign a consent in order to get your kid into this since there was a waiting list probably sends all kinds of wrong messages. It's clearly a lever to be used against parents and was used against parents to get them to opt in. So then you start finding character questions embedded in the in what it, at least I thought, and was sold initially to all of us as a study of academic success, but in fact it's more than that. When you don't get all the answers the first time, it makes when you do start getting answers, it casts suspicion on the entire process. So, I don't know exactly. We'll have to sit down, Dr. Crandall, and talk about what to do with this going forward. But at least at this point in time, I would hope that we would not. Colorado's children are not a research project. And they deserve better treatment than to become part of a research project. And I think we need to be extraordinarily careful about entering into any of these agreements with any of these people unless somebody can clearly show us a benefit. And what allowing the University of Virginia to comment on whether or not core knowledge curriculum has a positive result on student achievement, I've in my own mind answered that question. So, next item is where are we? Let's see, 13.
Next is 14.01.
Yeah, so it'd be 14.01. Is that where we are, Elizabeth?
Yes,
thank you.
All right, request from Cheyenne Mountain School District regarding waiver of statutes. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, would you like the table or the podium?
Let me just see if we got everybody here. There we are. Perfect. Dr. Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. board members and Commissioner Crandall, thanks for the opportunity to present Cheyenne Mountain School District's request for waiver of state statutes. And I know you have a compressed agenda this month and time's limited, so in an attempt to leave as much time as possible for questions, I'll be brief in my comments, really just to 3 points, in an effort to maybe add a little background and clarity to our request and also to register, for what it's worth, an issue that I see as troublesome. So first of all, as you most likely gathered from the request itself, the main reason for us pursuing this waiver is our desire to not add to our present practice the burden of additional requirements set forth by the School Readiness Initiative, which we see as redundant. We understand the importance of screening, evaluation, and intervention with our youngest students, which is evidenced by the protocols and assessments contained in our request. I believe you have those materials, although they may not be in the specific manner with which current statute now requires. We've done this for nearly a decade, and it works. How do we know it works? Well, beyond teacher, parent, and other anecdotal feedback, as one simple data point around literacy specifically, I suggest the fact that the most recent CDE annual report on the READ Act indicated that 14% of primary grade students in Colorado were classified as having a significant reading deficiency. The data driving this report simultaneously indicated that Cheyenne Mountain School District registered 5%, and current data indicates our percentage has dropped even further, 4%. So I would argue that clearly we're doing something right, and we were doing so long before there was a state mandate, an approved and prescribed assessment and data collection tool, and forthcoming additional reporting requirements. So as a result, I think it would be hard to argue that our approach does not meet the original intent of the law, and that is ensuring a child is able to, and I quote from the law, engage and benefit from elementary school classroom environments. And meeting the intent of the law is obviously the standard identified in the CDE waiver fact sheet and process. The second point I feel compelled to address is an issue that came to light for me in this process. As a quick background to this issue, Cheyenne Mountain Charter Academy, now the Vanguard School, is our charter school, and they were granted a waiver from the School Readiness Initiative earlier in this school year. Because we have such an outstanding relationship with them, they shared all of their information, including their feedback from the department, and directly assisted us in crafting our waiver request. This is the initial time that we've ventured into any type of request. So as you might imagine, our requests, at least in our view, were very similar, both in content and format. And so you might understand that I was significantly taken aback by the level of scrutiny and initial feedback we received from staff regarding perceived shortcomings of our initial request. So when I asked staff to defend the discrepancy, it was explained to me that the level of evaluation applied to charter school waiver requests, and I'm not talking about the automatic requests, was much less because the assumption is that the charter requests have already undergone a level of evaluation by the local Board of Education, which in part is understandable. What I, and more importantly my board, does not understand is why our local board's endorsement of a plan for its traditional schools would receive less credence by the department than the same board's authorization of a plan for its charter schools. I don't know if this issue remains germane to our specific request or not. I would like to think that after a lot more work and several revisions to our request, we've now demonstrated that our plan is at least equal in intent to that of our charter schools, which was approved. But in a state that seemingly prides itself on local control, this seems to be an inappropriate double standard that undermines the authority of local boards of education. Again, I have no idea if it's germane to your consideration of our request, but I think it is an issue that at least deserves some level of conversation at some point, and I would gladly entertain that conversation. Lastly, on the important issue of teacher recruitment and retention, and you might wonder why I bring that up, I was excited to read in one of Commissioner Crandall's recent communications the consideration of a national campaign around why it is great to be a Colorado teacher, something I've been for nearly 35 years. I couldn't agree more with the need for such an initiative, and I would suggest that one way to propel this is to approve our waiver request and others like it that may be forthcoming, and allow teachers to spend time doing what they do best, and that is teaching. So thanks again for allowing me to represent the Cheyenne Mountain School District here today in this process, and I'll gladly answer any questions that you might have regarding our request.
Thank you, Dr. Cooper. Questions for Dr. Cooper? Yes, Dr. Schroeder? Did you have questions?
No, but I do have one. Okay. I have a concern. And maybe you don't agree with me, but I would say that when the legislature passes laws, they have an intent, and that applies to all schools, those that are highly successful with their kids and those where they're having really challenges. And so I think to the extent that we or our staff through us puts a high a high expectation on the replacement, the difference that you want, the difference in the procedures that you want to go through in order to meet the legislative intent. I think there's really still a very strong expectation that the legislative intent is met, and that's the real concern. And that the reporting that your district with a waiver provides to the state can be merged with and somehow provide the same information back to the legislature. So we're not in this simple position, I don't think, to just say we love local control, therefore we're going to ignore what the legislature has said. And so I guess I would feel a whole lot better about these things if your district and staff can come to an agreement that your proposed process for meeting those expectations really does align with what was the legislative intent. That's the worry that I think you're going to hear from us, and that's the worry that you heard from staff. The fact that your board, I mean, I don't know if your board goes through your waivers on a regular basis to evaluate whether the waiver that you've received or that you've sought and been granted by the state is actually meeting the expectations of what the legislation intended. You do that with a charter because they come up for renewals, and that's a scheduled process. I don't know if you have a scheduled process for any waiver that you've received from the state as a district for your regular schools that has that kind of a schedule. So you see that it's not analogous, it's not identical, unless you actually create a system where it is the same thing, in which case I think I would look at it differently. Thanks.
May I respond, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please. So,
thank you, Dr. Schroeder, and I don't disagree with you. I think that there should be a very high standard. My point is I believe that the standard should be equally applied to every waiver that is put forth, and that's not the indication that I got. So if I seem to think that there should be a lower standard applied to ours, I don't mean to say that. I think that our performance speaks for itself in terms of the standard. So regardless of it was the process that I was referring to. I don't believe, and I haven't thought through the issue of reporting fully, based on the feedback that we received from staff relative to the reporting requirement, and maybe staff could clarify that. I don't believe that it was the responsibility of us in applying for the waiver to address the reporting, but I also don't believe that whatever the reporting requirement is, that we're exempt from that given the waiver of statute. And maybe I'm confusing components there. But certainly I'm not asking to lower the standard. That's not what we're about. And I think that point is well taken.
But I was describing process.
Right.
Process of reevaluation.
And
I admittedly am
a little bit new to this. You talked about a process by which we frequently review waivers. We've never been in this arena before. We've never asked for a waiver. I understand that it's a very common thing in the charter world. I get that. But I would be surprised if this is the last time you see me in front of this board with a waiver request.
Well, then it would be great if you would be able to also come forward with a recommendation of how you plan to continue to evaluate your system to ensure that whatever was the legislative intent, because I think that's our job here, is to fulfill that intent, that it's being met.
Yes. I agree,
that's
Dr.
Not, that's not just and scores, right? There are other factors that are involved there for kids.
I agree, Dr. Shorter, but I would say that the intent is it can be a strange nexus, and intent does not mean letter of the law. Intent means, are we at the end of the day doing what the legislature and by law or the state board by rule wanted us to do? And I think it would be hard pressed for anybody to argue, given our outcomes, that we are not doing that.
May I ask a question?
Dr. Flores? I'm sorry.
Dr. Cooper, would you tell us a little bit about the district, the number of children and staff, teachers?
I'd love to. It's my favorite thing to do. So we have a proud graduate in the room. I won't call him out because he's running the meeting. But the Cheyenne Mountain School District is the roughly geographically the southwest quarter of Colorado Springs. We're a district of about 5,000 students. 4,000 of those students are in our typical schools, about 1,000 students in the Vanguard School, which I believe may be the longest-standing charter school in the state. Mrs. Cole is still here. She probably could, as a founder of that school, could tell me. We have approximately 80% of the 1,000 students at the Vanguard School are non-resident choice students. About 25% of our district or typical schools are choice students. Oftentimes, I think that Cheyenne Mountain is seen as an extremely affluent, high property, high income district. To a large degree, it is, but with 25% choice students, that demographic has changed substantially over the years. We're a single high school district on the typical side. Vanguard School is a K-12 campus. We have 5 elementary schools and 1 junior high school.
Thank you. I was impressed that you have a speech pathologist that measures the speech of all your kindergarten students. That was impressive. And I don't think that is something that is provided for all kindergarten, for other kindergarten kids in other districts. Thank you.
Ms. Masney.
This actually is probably not a question for you, Dr. Cooper, but we had another waiver before us recently. I need my memory refreshed. I think it was the Kiowa School District.
Yes.
Was it the same request? I mean, the same
Mr.
waiver?
It was a request for a school readiness waiver. The replacement plans are different based on the district and based on how they approach that. So,
okay.
Yes.
But it's the same. It's basically they're asking for the same waiver.
Correct.
Different plans. Okay. Gotcha. Thank you.
Hey, could you remind me in that, did we put any time limit on that Kiowa? Was it Kiowa?
Yes. I do not believe you did, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Yes,
so does that end up being a forever waiver?
I think it did, which is, yes. Who's next? Ms. Rankin? Oh. Or Jane, were you? No.
Dr. Cooper, thank you for coming and presenting this before us, and also thank you for the good work that you do in Cheyenne Mountain. I have a question for the staff to just give some, maybe a couple, 3 points on what the difficulty is with this one. For the record?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
And staff, I mean, just to give a little bit of an overview, you all have asked staff to provide you, since this is a little bit of a different process than a charter process, to provide you with information, since you all are making the decision rather than the district, about whether to approve these waivers. So we have just provided information in that chart that you have around the law language and then what was in the replacement plan and just questions for you to consider, which is, you know, if there was a question on staff that we couldn't quite discern if it met the validity and reliability that the law stated, we just flagged that for you, saying we weren't quite clear if it met the validity and reliability in the replacement plan. Doesn't mean it doesn't. Doesn't mean that they don't have a good process. It just means that since you're making the decision, you've asked us to flag those things for you. So that's from what I can see here. Just you know, a little more detail in the plan and definitely understand Dr. Cooper's, there is confusion around the differences between charter, you know, charter process and this waiver process. This waiver process is new to us as well. And so we've been giving the board information to help you make your decision.
Is it true that the waiver for a charter school then is a little less rigorous as the one for the public school?
And I'm going to have to ask Gretchen Morgan to answer that one.
I'm sorry. I misspoke.
I knew that was coming.
Neighborhood school. Mm-hmm. Forgive me.
That's okay.
We have to keep reminding.
I think the difference there is that the local board scrutinizes. And so to some extent, there may be greater variability there because that local board may or may not have a high bar in what they look at the replacement plan. You all look at those things, but as a sort of general practice as a board, you have largely deferred to that local district. I think both because there is a district that reviews it and also the sort of scale of impact is smaller because it's a school within that district rather than a district in total. That's been the previous discussions of the board.
Commissioner?
I was just going to say one thing more. So what you've done is you've taken what you found successful in the charter school and you just want to bring that over into your neighborhood school.
That's great.
No, ma'am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The process by which we crafted the waiver. So our approach, quite frankly, is in terms of protocols and assessment and screening is quite different from the charter schools. Our charter schools' waiver really was more focused on curriculum and instruction. So I was talking more about the process by which we categorized what we were doing in terms of our replacement plan, made sure that the components were there. So our charter schools' outcomes are equally effective. In terms of very, very few kids being identified for READ plans, they're very high achieving, with a relatively challenging population. So from that standpoint, there were some significant differences, but from the waiver presentation standpoint, and quite frankly, the degree, the level of scrutiny and the degree of feedback that was provided back to us was significantly different.
And you have full support of your board, correct?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Dr. Scheffel.
I want to thank you for the great work you do on behalf of your students and parents and families. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Scheffel.
Further, yes,
just very fast,
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, and Dr. Cooper, thank you so much for being here. Look forward to getting to know you better.
Thank you.
Together. The question, I don't know if it's for staff, being new enough to the process, I can understand the frustration Dr. Cooper feels, because I would probably feel the exact same way had I had a similar experience already, and I'm trying to do something similar but different. And so, is it driven by statute, the differences, or was it driven by personality of reviewers? You know, I would like to think that all waivers are bought and have a very intense level of scrutiny, and that is this the best thing for kids, as supported by the local board. But and it's almost like it's a vague question, but I can understand frustration. I would like to make sure this doesn't happen again, or that there's a reason why we have different reasons.
Yeah. So there are, I think there actually are two reasons for differences. One is there actually is a difference in legal standard for charter waivers than there are for district waivers, just in how they're described in law. And later we can talk lots about that if you want to. And so there is actually a difference. We can ask the Attorney General how significant those are probably, but there is a difference in law. And then the other thing is, again, it's been just historically, history is short on this, right? It's been only 6 or 8 months or so here that we've had districts start coming and seeking these waivers that had been in statute for a long time, but pretty underutilized until recently. And so in recent history, I'll say, with the board on this, the board has just considered that the fact that there is a local review and that the sort of scale of impact locally is smaller, that their role in scrutinizing against charters might be different than their role in scrutinizing things against district-wide waivers. And I think in the law, for both of these kinds of waivers, it is the board's discretion to do that. And so staff is trying just to offer information into this process, understanding that you know, our board may either be very excited about or very uncomfortable with, actually, the authority and the legal standards that they have around making these decisions for waivers. It's not a very clear set of criteria that the board uses. And so we are just trying to get enough information from districts that we can offer enough information to you all that you feel like you have what you need to make decisions. So there's no desire to be difficult or differential in ways that are insignificant or based on personalities. That's not part of the process.
And Mr. Chair and board members, I look forward to learning this process more, because if I have a proactive early adopter district, let's make that process work for that.
I have one more.
Go ahead.
So do I understand this correctly, that what you're telling us is how you're not doing anything new or different with regard to screening? You're saying that you are using a process that you've been using all along and that helps you identify students who need intervention, and you have all the it's nothing new. It's just saying we don't need to adopt your process because we have one that works.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Yes, Dr. Schroeder.
So I'll be honest with you and tell you that one of the things I don't love hearing from the legislators that I've known for a long time is how PO'd they are by virtue of the fact that we do grant waivers. It really pisses them off because they worked very hard and very long to pass these laws because they thought it was best for the kids of the state of Colorado. And here we are saying, you know, if we grant waivers for some schools, why don't we open it up to all schools? So please recognize the just recognize the tension.
Just Dr. Schroeder, I am a very familiar face at the Capitol, and I have the same effect on them many times. So I
fair enough.
Understand.
So we can commiserate on that one, because if there's anything I've heard from the legislators, and even some of the retired legislators, boy, do they feel free to let into me. So,
huh? They aren't running for re-election.
Well, I always worry what they're running for next, to be honest with you. I think you just said that the whole notion of the reporting on the school readiness hadn't wasn't right out there in front, and that's partly because we haven't talked about that, right? We're looking at that, I think, today. So my question that I'd like you to either answer or be thinking about answering at some other time is, will you be able to give us a report that measures, not by child, but in general, the physical well-being, motor development, social and emotional development, language and comprehension, et cetera, the various categories that are actually in the legislation, whether you'll be able to report to the department so that we can combine the data from your district to the other districts so that we can report back to the legislature where our kids statewide are, where our kids are in school readiness and how it changes over time? Because I think that's one thing that we're facing at the moment. I don't know if it was part of the conversation you had. It would have been a little unfair if we'd have said to you, you got to do this, this, and this, when in fact we're not there. On the other hand, we're going there. So I want to make sure you know we're going there.
So the answer to that, Dr. Schroeder, is I think absolutely. We have, in the information that we presented, you show how we assess in each of those required domains, and then some, quite frankly, but the waiver was specifically around those domains. We are building a plan for every student, not just students who are identified as developmentally delayed. And so
you'll have the capacity to, whatever we decide is being necessary for reporting, it won't be a hardship for you guys to also provide that information.
I don't know if it'd be a hardship or not. We'll comply with whatever the rule is. Not knowing exactly what the interface of that data submission would be, we will have that data. At the local level, we will have that data in each of those domains on every kindergarten student. Not utilizing TS Gold or another approved data collection tool, the data submission may be less seamless, and that may require some more issue on our end. However, I didn't address the data collection issue regarding TS Gold, which was an initial driver of this. I think we've calmed those waters with our community, partially because of the waiver, but request. So I don't know what level of hardship it will be, because I don't know what that interface or submission will look like. But Dr. Short, to answer your first question, yes, we absolutely would have that data on every kindergarten student.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I just, add a, I just wanted to add one note, if I may.
Yes, please.
Which is just that the feedback from staff indicated clearly that they don't need to speak to their ability to do that. It's just we have, every time this request has come before you, we've reminded you all that, the more variability that you accept here, there may be implications on data collection. So that was just the same reminder that you've received before, that that may be an implication of this that you should be aware of.
And that was made very clear to us
as well.
Yeah,
it's not anything you need to... I want to make sure you're not...
Yes, Ms. Ring.
So then what you're saying is we are going to possibly approve a program that hasn't been aligned with some of the things that we need information on, and so we're putting the cart before the horse. Is that where we are right now with this?
So the feedback from staff specifically was that some of the mechanisms they chose to make those determinations per area identified in statute were not ones that staff could say for sure were valid for those purposes.
Now, why,
so that doesn't mean that they wouldn't have data to give you.
So why is it? Is it because it's not an off-the-shelf thing that is aligned already? Is this that they're developing it locally? Is that where the problem is? So you have to give it a year or two or three to see if it's going to be successful or that they can align it at CDE? I mean, the fact that that wasn't proposed initially enough for our staff to look at it is troublesome to me.
I'm going to have to infer a little bit here because I'm not the content person on this, but having been in discussions about these reviews, I'm going to try and offer something here, and I would invite Katie at this to disagree if you see it differently. I think that what is true is that staff here, when this statute passed, had to go through processes to determine which kinds of things would meet the technical requirements based on what was in statute, and that the processes that these guys are suggesting or some of the tools maybe that they've identified didn't meet those same criteria that staff used for previous evaluation for this purpose. I think that that is what that
and
means.
I think it was just the level of detail. And so we went back and forth and just and said you can provide the detail here, and Dr. Cooper's here, but in the plan we didn't have the detail necessary to make the judgment, so we just didn't make a judgment.
Right.
We just provided you the information to say we couldn't discern that.
Appreciate that. But even though we've talked to him, we don't have that detail where we would be making a decision without the detail. Thank you.
Yes, Dr. Sheffel.
Well, it strikes me that as we look, though, at the information that was presented to us that's supporting documents, they have a very rigorous approach to readiness.
Right.
And actually, we do have a lot of data, and it actually, based on your data that's longitudinal, suggests that it actually works. So when the CDE says that there's psychometric information or the psychometric technical adequacy of the assessments isn't, you can't quote chapter and verse as far as their reliability and validity, that's because they're using a lot of teacher judgment, right, as opposed to a standardized assessment. So, I mean, and I think that their data suggests that they're doing this work with a high degree of effectiveness. So I understand what the department is saying. I also understand what the district is doing at the school. So those are, you know, that's great information. But when you look at their supporting documents, it's quite robust.
Right. And we all know that humans are the best instrument. They are.
Yes, Dr. Schroeder.
This is a bit of an aside, but I would be grateful for your comment. We are... recommending that there be a bill that when we grant waivers to districts, that there be a, I'm not sure that we have the right word, a review or a comeback or some sort of a...
Expiration.
So that there's a renewal, particularly for the schools of innovation and I believe the kind of waiver that you're talking about right now. How would you comment on that? Would you be comfortable?
Absolutely. If it's effective for mill levy overrides, I'm fine with it for waivers. I mean, that's why people buy in, because they know it's... And I would just add to that upon that review, one of the things that I learned through this, and this is no fault of the process nor the department, but this is the waiver request really is all about inputs. And to Dr. Sheffield's point... talking about the fact that our outcomes demonstrate that regardless of whether there is a psychometric tie to reliability and validity of the instrument. The outcome really should be what tells us if we're doing things effectively. And the waiver process is all about inputs. I think that actually revisiting the waiver process with a sunset clause or an expiration date and having that and having part of that review be demonstrated proficiency, I think could be very powerful.
And you'd probably have a different board. I mean, that's the other piece of the process. Given term limits, you're going to have sort of a renewal of awareness of where your district is by virtue of this process.
But I would be especially supportive of that if demonstrated outcomes were part of the renewal, because that's what it really should be about.
Yep. Thanks.
So, thank you. So, Dr. Cooper, if as part of the waiver motion to grant the waiver were to include an expiration in 5 years or something, would you have any?
I would have no objection to that, Mr. Chairman.
That? And that would, I think we're struggling as a board with trying to deal with the legislature and you know, if something goes wrong with a district that we've granted a waiver to, we have no way to retrieve or go back in any fashion on that.
Fully understood.
I think we feel a little more comfortable if there was some review process, and but I don't think anybody quibbles with your results. So
I have no aversion to accountability whatsoever.
Okay. Thank you very much. No. Do you have a motion?
Sure.
All right.
I move to approve the Cheyenne Mountain School District.
I move to approve the Cheyenne Mountain School District waiver request from School Readiness Assessment 22-7-1014 to ACRS with the request that there be a reevaluation at the end of 5 years.
Okay. It's a proper motion. Is there a second? Dr. Flores? Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Is there objection to the adoption of that motion?
Mr. Chair,
yes,
can we make that 3 instead of 5 years, since this is so new to us? Is that possible?
Sure, we've done the other ones for 3 years.
I like 3 instead of 5, and I sure would like to get a report back on that.
Okay. Any?
No objections, Mr.
Right?
Chairman.
So if by incorporation, if the second will accept 3 versus 5?
Yes.
Very good. Now, is there objection to that motion as a... three-year waiver of the provisions. Seeing no objection, that motion is adopted on a vote of 7-0. Thank you, Dr.
Thank
Cooper.
You.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Board. Commissioner. Thank you.
All right. Excuse me. Let's proceed to where are we? 14, item 15. We write 15 school readiness reporting system 15.01.
Something. What is it?